Shout out to Julian Banks. Yes, sir. And I am Big Snoop Dogg.
Welcome back to another episode of After Hours. I'm your host, Julian Banks. We are here with Taryn Southern. Taryn produced the first AI-generated music album in 2017. She consults for Fortune 100 companies on AI, and she's an advisor for leading neurotech companies and brain-computer interfaces. Welcome to the show, Taryn.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you on. Yeah.
Sorry I was stuck in traffic, kept you waiting.
BMW navigation. It's all good.
Is that LA a subtle life.
Flex or I don't know. My BMW, my Ferrari tech is out. I don't know. But we connected first through our mutual friend, Matt Belinsky, who was just on my podcast a few days ago. You were on his like last week.
It's a podcast network.
It's what That's we do. It's in the family.
We all just podcast all day long.
It's kind
we
of don't have jobs. Saturated, I feel. Yeah. We just all like rotate with each other and yeah.
Do you find yourself rolling your eyes if you're at a party and someone's like talking about their podcast?
That's why.
Or the podcast that they're developing.
That's why I'm like hesitant to just even tell people that I do this, because it's like I'm a music producer, DJ, okay. Plus podcast. It's the most cliche thing. But great. We try to make it different. And then, yeah, Chester C.
Oh my gosh. How do you know Chester?
I know him through Darwin. Do you know Darwin?
Darwin.
Metzger.
Metzger. Yeah. I haven't seen Darwin in forever, but yes.
Yeah.
I know,
so
I know
Chester's him. Coming on in a few days too.
Oh my gosh, crazy.
But yeah, so you've really become, you know, the face of music and AI.
I don't know about that, but thank you. I'll take it.
You're humble. And you know, AI has really just had this transformative shift in the past year, really. But it wasn't, you know, 1950s when it first came about, it didn't really garner that much respect. I mean, it had, I guess progress was slow. Capabilities didn't really meet expectations. And it wasn't until, I guess, 15 years ago with like the advent of deep learning that it first came back to like the collective lexicon. Mm-hmm. So now with AI, ChatGPT, LLMs, it's influencing tech, fashion, film, and now music. So you're kind of pioneering the space in music. What was the initial impetus for you just to get involved?
So I always approached music as a hobbyist, not as a professional musician. I was a YouTube creator for many years. I also was an actress and a host and kind of one of those stereotypical LA people who does a little bit of everything. Mm. So I just loved creating. Mm-hmm. And I found on YouTube kind of a home for my music passions to live. And it was a place where you didn't necessarily have to be great. You could just be good enough. Mm-hmm. And people will listen and watch. And so it was just always fun for me. But I never had any, I guess, misconceptions about kind of my skill set or my talent. It was like I always felt limited. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, I was reading this article in the New York Times about how AI was making music. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a company in London that they were profiling. So I reached out to the company. I said, can I play with your cool tools? Mm. And then ended up reaching out to six other companies and kind of getting my hands on these tools before they were even publicly available. Mm. I was just excited to create something. I thought that I would be creating background music for mm-hmm. YouTube videos.
Mm. What were the tools? This was for specifically YouTube?
Amper. Or? At the time, the companies I reached out to,
I remember
was,
Amper, yeah.
It was
yeah.
Amper, Juke Deck, Ava, Google Magenta, IBM Watson Beat.
Okay.
And there was one other one, but those were the ones I first reached out to.
Nice.
And got my hands on all of them and a few others that I played with. And I realized I could actually make an album with this mm-hmm. without having any production skills whatsoever.
Nice.
And I liked the back and forth process. It was really, really fun and interesting. And I'm so excited that now people understand they have, you know, you have a reference point in using the LLMs mm-hmm. to accomplish all kinds of tasks, and it's not dissimilar from the music.
Sure.
As I'm sure you know.
So you started out, you didn't play any music at all and just worked on or just passionate about music, and this kind of was an additive tool for that, or?
Yeah, I took 2 years of piano lessons in middle school from a teacher who had severe narcolepsy.
How does that even? Wow. Okay.
So you can imagine
during the lessons too.
Oh yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you can imagine what that did for my piano skills.
So you just pause midway in a lot of classical Mozart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was slow going.
Yeah.
And so I have basic, very, very basic ability to read sheet music.
Sure.
And plunk out some chords. So there's a little bit of a language there, but that's it. Mm-hmm. That's really it. But I always, you know, I'm also a filmmaker. I made a documentary from 2018 to 2020, and it's very, very music centric. And I feel like, I don't know, I hear music. I'm sure all musicians say this, but I feel like it's in my body when I hear it. And a lot of times I'll be listening to the radio and I'm like, I just want this chord to do this different thing. And I wish I had the skill set to be able to pick up a guitar and actually do that. But I always know what I want and what I'm kind of listening for.
Yeah.
So what is like the current landscape now? So you had Amper and stuff like that back then. But now what are we involved in? Because I just saw, even just with film, Sora, he literally just text in something. Can you do that with music now, or is that
a video? Yes, there are a number of text to music engines, and I can actually pull up my Apple Notes if you'd like and read through the tools, because they've all changed so much. I mean, Watson Beat isn't even available anymore, I don't think. Sure. Amper sold to Shutterstock, and I don't know if it's available anymore. That was the model I used the most for the making of my album. I felt it was the furthest along. It had a very Hans Zimmer flair because he was involved.
I do remember that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And all of the music production had been taken care of inside of Amper. Excuse me. Whereas a lot of the early AI tools were MIDI based, so I was like, I don't know what to do with this. It's hard. Now everything has become so much more sophisticated. There's absolutely text to music. Facebook's been working on their text to music tool. I was playing with it last week. Let's pull up the tools.
I mean, I tried it and it was like, there was some,
I thought it was bad. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know if it was that one that I tried, but I tried like 10 different ones for just voice cloning. And so I did, the one that I love is called kits.ai. Have you seen that? So we do that just basically for reference tracks. So like if we send in something to Morgan Wallen, we'll do literally just clone his exact voice. And that's the one that sounds exactly like him, I think. There was a few that were just...
Cool. Kits.ai. I'm writing this down as I'm...
Yeah. Voice. But there were ones where you type in, like, I want a Mozart inflected track or something like Bach. And it
didn't sound right.
Yeah, something was off with it. But maybe the Hans Zimmer one would be a little better with that. But.
So Suno.ai, MusicFX, which is Google's AI Task Kitchen, SoundDraw, MusicFi, Splash Pro. Then I also tested MusicFlow, Refusion, Loudly. And all of these are kind of have their own unique spin, right? Some of them, you're creating cover songs of other artists' stuff. Some of it, it's typing in your own lyrics, and it'll create a riff with the lyrics and add an actual vocalist, AI vocalist singing the lyrics. That was Refusion, which I actually thought Refusion was pretty cool, but it's only 15 seconds.
Oh, no, and then you got to pay for the extra.
Which all of these, they all have, as you know. Like, MusicFi is text to music. You can also create your own AI vocals with your own uploads. I did not test that part, though. SoundDraw, I thought, had pretty high quality riffs, but there wasn't enough customization. The one thing I like about Ava is actually being able to go in and adjust note by note. Like you would in any kind of DAW.
Is that MIDI or is it just like the audio that you can change?
No, it's got the audio.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you can change the instruments. So it's kind of combining the best of Amper with Ava. I will admit that the initial outputs from Ava leave a lot to the imagination. But at least as someone who knows music, you can go in and customize. You can export stems till the cows come home and it's all.
I think it's good just to get that creation process going, because I think skeptics argue that it kind of marginalizes the songwriter. We're going to replace them. But I think for me, at least, it's like I have an idea. I want to get it down, and I play guitar, I play piano, but I don't fully know music theory and things like that. I hear a viola, I hear a cello. I want to just get that out, materialize that. This is the best way to do that, I think. So
100%, I think that's a really great explanation. And the other thing that I realized was in using Amper and Ava specifically is being able to hear all these different instruments and see how they are laying out these instruments in an initial output of a song, where I was like I would never have tried to use that harpsichord sound there, but it's cool. So now I'm going to figure out how to integrate it in a way that makes sense. And now I know what that instrument can sound like with these different styles. That's its own music education.
Yeah, 100%.
What were like the AI powered Drake songs? what did they use to create that, you know, or even the Beatles?
All done privately created models using most likely GitHub. I mean, GitHub, Google Collab, a lot of these open source models were sort of done anonymously. I don't know if someone went through the tracks and scraped the tracks, the vocals off of the tracks, and then put together the model.
Just to like clone his voice and then put it in basically singing in their own style, their own voice, and then cloning Drake's, I guess, something like that.
Yes, probably. Okay. Yes, exactly.
Got it.
And does it work the exact same way as like an LLM? Do they just input data, a bunch of musical data?
That's a really great question. I don't think so.
Because like with Hans Zimmer, I'm sure it was more, you know.
A lot of these early music AIs were so much further along than what we now are seeing in the LLM space and the text and the video and
it started with music and
image. Then, it started with music, but those, again, none of those were LLM models. So I'm assuming that they're not, but Facebook's might be.
Okay, so they're utilizing a variety of techniques. So they do data collection, pre-processing, feature extraction. So a lot of it is training, okay? So you have like pre-processed music data with stems. So you'll have like guitar riffs, you'll have piano riffs, and then they'll run, I guess, like an archive of, you know, top songs through it. So.
And it turns out that, yes, large language models are now increasingly being used to create AI music software.
Got it. Okay.
So, but this is a relatively new development as a result of all of the LLM developments.
What was like your first album like? I mean, what kind of songs did you work on?
Well, because so much of it was influenced and used Amper, it had a very cinematic...
Cool.
Cinematic pop vibe, because again, Hans Zimmer's team was sort of the people behind it, and so there were a lot of like kind of big documentary. I'm sorry, big cinematic. Although
these
there was a
epic
sort of documentary.
Soundscapes kind of thing. Yeah, yes. You're like, I'm a composer,
which is sort of weird. A lot of electronic,
cool
elements as well, but I didn't go in making it thinking like I'm going to make this my magnus opus. It was just this really fun experiment. Can I actually make a handful of songs that are listenable?
Yeah.
If I were to do it again, I think that there are so many more tools, obviously, that would make it.
What was the initial reaction? Did you show your parents or anybody in the music industry? Or
I guess what was the reaction? There was definitely a lot of attention on it. Not huge amounts, because I don't think AI was really in the kind of public lexicon, as you said earlier. But it was still sort of weird enough to where people were talking about it. And I feel like the reaction was mixed. On one hand, people were sort of intrigued, like, what is this? What is this thing that's making music? On the other hand, from people in the music industry, everyone just said, this is BS. No one's going to use these tools. Why would they use these tools? And just were completely uninterested, except for electronic music managers. I get a lot of calls from managers of electronic artists.
Those techniques.
Saying, what are you using? Yeah. How do we get our hands on it? Tell us about this. They wanted to understand, because they already are more, of course, prone to want to adopt new technology.
How are you transitioning from music albums and things like that into consulting for companies?
I mean, the album was really just a kind of fun side project. At the time, I was actually working in neurotechnology and making this movie, this film called I Am Human, which explored the coevolution of humans and machines.
Okay.
And I followed three real-world people who decided to go under the knife and get an implantable brain-computer interface with the hope of restoring function that they had lost due to paralysis or other neurological disease. And so that was 4 years of my life, but it was certainly focused on AI and focused on these same themes of like, what does it mean to be human if we're implanting a chip in our brain, if we're using AI to make music, if we're doing all of these projects were sort of the just thematically related to a curiosity I've always had, which is this kind of interplay of humans and technology. So anyway, the album was not meant to be sort of a career marker, but just like an exploration. And then following the album's release and following the film's release, I ended up taking a job as chief storytelling officer at a at a pretty large implantable brain-computer interface company. So working in serious med tech with the scientists and engineers translating their work to the public. And that's been a lot of fun. But on the side, I love sharing the gospel of AI. Nice. It's fun. Yeah. I find, you know, I'm always working on creative side projects using these tools. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love doing on the weekends. And so that's where the advising other companies came in. But the focus of the advising is really on how do you amplify your team's creativity, communication skills, you know, these things that we think of as distinctly human, really, distinctly human traits. How do you use AI for those aspects of the business?
What are like the current neurotech developments recently that you're saying? Because you're still in it.
Yeah, I'm still very much in it. And it's a very exciting time, primarily because a couple years ago, Elon Musk threw his hat in the ring and said, I'm going to put a bunch of money into Neuralink, which is his company that's been building their own kind of unique chip in the brain. And they actually just got into human trials. But that has put obviously a spotlight on the space in a lot of ways. And so the company that I've been with, you know, we've done a couple of fundraising rounds since I've been there. And there's a lot happening. I mean, there's institutions around the world that are running these clinical trials. We've got patients who can imagine anything that you can do with your computer. These patients can do just by thinking about it.
That's right. They did that where they were like an example where he was like Googling something with his mind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can search the internet, you can create art in Photoshop, you can operate a robotic arm, you can operate a wheelchair. Anything you can do with a digital device, you can do with just your brain thinking about it. And kind of the sort of back end of how that all works feels, I think that's the thing that most people sort of get wrong. It's not like the BCI can just read your thoughts, can't read abstract thoughts. You have to be thinking about very, very specific motor control movements in order to facilitate these devices. But it's very exciting.
That's amazing. How does it help with paralysis?
So really what it intends to do is to bring independence back to the people with paralysis. Because, you know, so many of these people, they're living with caretakers. They can't, you know, they can't do anything without those people with them 24/7. And so to have the ability to operate a robotic arm or a wheelchair or to work on a computer, this gives them potentially a whole new way of doing that. But I say this with the caveat that none of this is commercially available. So if you have these disorders, you can't walk into your doctor's office and get a BCI. Right. You have to sign up for a clinical trial and participate that way. So we're still some years away from these things becoming mainstream devices.
It's tough with, you know, I guess technology and engineer are always like the drivers, and then politics can kind of come in and mess things up. So you have, I guess, the Music Modernization Act, which is like that bipartisan law that kind of addresses the inequities with songwriters and things like that. But now we have so many new different developments with AI. So what kind of laws are coming out now, or is it kind of outpacing?
I don't stay up on the music industry as much as I should, but I did something that I saw a lot when I was in the YouTube world was just how quickly these tech companies were having to come up with new monetization strategies to reflect what was happening with the technology. So I remember the first few years of YouTube, it was impossible to cover a song. You couldn't get a sync license. Like getting a sync license, getting any kind of license to do a proper cover was next to impossible.
Yeah.
And there was no startup or technology player in the scene that had made that easy. I think maybe 3 years into YouTube, 4 years into YouTube, there was a company that started doing that. A few years later, Stem, you know, and some of these automatic payment companies that dealt with royalties and splits between collaborators, like none of that was there. And so it was really hard to do a lot of things until you have those systems worked out. And I think the same's probably the case, you know, with the AI space. And I'm curious what you are seeing that is maybe in the driver's seat right now as a result of the innovation.
I think it's just like a lot of the artists are curious as to how their careers are going to go since they have AI avatars now, like cloning them. But I think a lot of them are going to be it's going to be additive. So it's like, you know, cloning your voice. You can actually, you know, be in a different country and perform there. You can be, you know, virtual performers, interactive performers, things like that. But I think the main thing that I've seen in the studio is just like a lot more additive tools for things like mixing and mastering and attenuating. I think regulations are going to be, especially like the labels are going to get involved, protecting people that want to just, you know, release a Drake track, obviously things like that. But then do you own the IP of Drake's voice, or is that just an artifact, kind of a sound? Can you prove that it's Drake's voice? Things like that. I think it's going to be difficult.
It'll get messy.
Yeah.
It'll get messy, but it'll be cool too. And yeah. I think there are a lot of artists who are excited about how they'll use the tech and are willing to give their voices to fans.
Yeah.
Provided that there's some kind of
monetization. That, right?
Yeah. As long as there's some sort of back end participation, I think she's like, great.
Yeah. She doesn't care. Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there will be other artists who will do the same. And I think once people, it'll be interesting. There will be some artist that will become a breakout AI hit based on a song that they never wrote, that a fan wrote with their voice.
True, yeah.
And once that happens and that artist makes a bunch of money on a track they didn't write, you'll see a lot more people, I think, start to be interested in
it. So maybe
in
it depends on artist specific. It's tough though, because the labels own those vocals or masters.
Well, I think something that is going to become very big is artists going into a studio, spending 8 hours, maybe not that long, an hour, just recording the best of their voice.
Yep. Oh, and then just kind
owning
of,
their data.
Yep.
Yeah, then you own your data. And you can then use these clone tools to your heart's content. And all it takes is whatever costs for a one-hour session in a nice studio.
I guess even if you don't have a good take in the studio yourself, doesn't matter. You're just like, fuck it, I'm just going to
upload. Yeah, and if you do an hour worth of singing with different words and styles. Mm. And I actually love the idea of that, because I never loved recording in the studio. Mm. I'm sure most artists do not feel this way. Yeah. It's probably their favorite part.
I prefer at home, just because like you can do like 50 takes. Otherwise, the engineer's like, dude, you know, you've done like 30 takes. Come on.
Yeah.
But I guess in the studio, with you can just keep doing it multiple times. Yeah.
You could do it as many times as you get that perfect, cool little whatever, you know, the right timing, the right.
Yeah.
I'm an editor too, so I think film, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I just love being in post-production and the tiny little tweaks that make the magic. Mm. Having that level of control is really, really fun for me. So I think there are a lot of artists who might appreciate not having the pressure of having to get the perfect take, but just using the edit tools to get
there. And that probably started in your YouTube days. Were you doing stuff with Chester as well?
Oh, yeah. We did so many cover songs together. You should look. We have a Taylor Swift
one. What was the one that he did? Nice Guys finished last, I remember. His big one, right?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't in that one, but we did Taylor Swift, We Are Never Getting Back Together. We did,
you did?
Carly Rae Jepsen. We did a parody of it where the first minute, it's a duet, that song, Call Me Maybe.
Okay. And then how did I Think I Farted come?
So my comedy music
take
days.
Take us back to
that's
the
really
intermachinations.
That's really where I started. I started with comedy music because I was never trying to be, like I said, a songwriter. My first album was a very sophomorically titled comedy album.
Yeah.
And I've tried to erase all traces of this from the internet. It's impossible.
That's the first thing I saw, yeah.
But
it's a classic.
I've deleted it. It's just that all the copies are up.
You're famous. It's what happens, yeah.
Got to use that copyright ID.
Yes.
There's a tool.
Exactly.
But you started in comedy, you went to music, you kind of got into AI this way. Like, where do you see yourself going forward?
I have no idea. I love that. I just follow my curiosities.
Yeah.
And we're in just such a rapidly evolving time that it's so easy. I mean, I may just have really bad ADHD because I see the shiny object. I'm like, that's so cool. Anything that doesn't have a roadmap or a how-to manual, I want to like get in there and use it. It's just my curiosity gets the best of me. So I think I have a feeling that this interesting nexus of spatial computing, music, AI, brain-computer interfaces, and not necessarily the implantable kind. I mean, there's really cool peripheral nervous system things, basically stuff that allows us to physically connect and embody with our technological tools. I think there's going to be some really cool, crazy future in that. Mm. And I also believe that there's going to be this whole new, like, emerging space for musicians and creators who also kind of have this very analytical brain and love learning about, like, medicine and science and the body.
Mm.
Like, the impact of music and sound waves and visuals on the human body. I think that's going to be a transformative space. Almost like call it a music engineer or music doctor, music shaman. Not, no, it's also so cheesy, but something that's...
Something at Burning Man, yeah.
Something that's like, but also has like real roots in medicine, because there's some amazing studies happening. I mean, ultrasound technology is a sound technology.
Yeah. No, we just did like a sound bath at our studio, and I didn't realize we have literally like a sound bath producer. So he has like all these frequencies, techniques, and literally after like 30 minutes, I was just fell asleep right away. And it's just the power of those frequencies was amazing.
Feel it. The vibrations in your body. I mean, it's so crazy. There's studies now being done on different sound frequencies in cancer cells. And I just think we'll see this kind of unique sound experience engineer title become a thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
What does, when you go to these companies, what's like a typical boardroom session look like? Are they hiring based off a certain need or?
I usually go in and do keynote talks.
Got it.
And then 1 or 2 day work sessions.
Okay.
So it's going in, it's sort of analyzing what are the problems that you're having, typically in the marketing and communications departments, but it could also be like an overarching leadership thing or CTOs that are really good on the technology front, but not so great at translating that to the other departments of the company. And so it's really just about helping them identify the various AI tools that they can use, how to implement a plan for experimentation and an implementation within the company, because all of this is so new.
Yeah.
Most companies, especially legacy companies that are using old legacy software systems, and it's really hard for them to adapt quickly. So I just go in there and encourage them and lay out a plan. Here's how you do it. Here's how you start in kind of small bite-sized ways. And also just encourage the teams to have fun and play and find kind of a unique voice using these tools so that they're not left behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some good brands now you think that are utilizing it really well?
That are using AI really well. Gosh. I mean, most of the technology companies are already ahead of the curve, but it's a lot of the, let me think about that. Companies.
So I'm thinking just like, you know, my sister works for Coca-Cola and she's just starting to have a bunch of people come in just to teach them about AI.
Yeah.
Because it's these legacy companies, traditional brands want to be part of it. I think, you know, if you walk by a Coke machine now that can kind of analyze your demographics and see what you prefer, things like that. But
yeah, I would say that the best companies that are implementing this stuff are very lean startups.
Yeah, true.
With small teams because they're super flexible. They're not on the legacy data systems.
Yeah.
And they can just be really lean and experimental about it. The larger companies are the harder ones. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the main, like, besides like scale AI, do you see any big AI companies that are going to be the next iteration? I guess Microsoft.
Microsoft is, I'm doing a lot with them. And I mean, any company also that is on the Microsoft system, which is so many companies, like they're using Teams, they're using, they're automatically going to be using Copilot, Microsoft's AI assistant tool. So a lot of these don't necessarily have a choice. It's kind of, this is their legacy system, so this is the tool they'll be using. And so I think in that regard, like Microsoft is gonna have a huge corner on the market because it's the enterprise software that so many companies use. But I think when you look at the smaller, more leaner startups that are using ChatGPT and have the enterprise version of that software and building their own custom GPTs using that, it's hard to say like what application layer company is going to win. It's just too early. Every time I think, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know, Sora came out 2 weeks ago and everyone was mind blown about what's possible with text to video. And then Alibaba just released their latest model a couple days ago. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Now, it's different than Sora. It can't do its image. It's actually image and audio to video. So you give the model a single image and a piece of audio, and it will lip sync perfectly the image.
Is that something you did with the language? You did like a Japanese translation?
That's a different one. That's called Heijin.
Got it.
And Heijin's also remarkable. You feed it 30 seconds of video on you, and it can contort your face and lip sync perfectly to any language yeah. using your voice. But it's 30 seconds of video. So that's still a lot of, not a lot of, I mean, gosh, 5 years ago, you would have needed 5-7 hours to make any of these systems work. But so 30 seconds is remarkable. Mm. But Alibaba is using a single frame. So you're not seeing the angles of these faces, and yet you're getting zero distortion. It looks just like the person. The models are so good that it can take a single frame and lip sync it to audio perfectly.
But this is this film creation like Sora, or no, you're just putting
it is creating a film. Okay. It's basically creating a film out of an image
based off of a character, or
it could be a fake character, it could be a real person, it could be whatever image you want, it could be an animated character. Sure. But the thing that's been holding AI systems back on the video side for the last 12 months is humans and speaking and getting the speaking right. It just always, if you saw any of the weird video generations from Midjourney, it just looks so weird, looks, and faces get contorted, and it was just very hard for the models to figure that out. Mm. And it's remarkable now that a single image can do that. So I think between Sora and Alibaba's system, I'm sure we're going to see some incredible updates from Microsoft and Apple and some of these other players as well. So who knows?
And this is going to like massively displace Hollywood, right? Because it's production companies. It's, you can create, I don't know if you can now, but full length films just based off of like a sentence.
Yes, there's a new FX tool, and I can't remember right now, but it just released they just released a trailer on X, showcasing the storyboarding tool that you can use to create a movie with just a few sentences to start. Obviously, no film, like, let's not kid ourselves, no film is going to be good off of a 3-second summary, but it's basically providing the structure and the roadmap and then filling in the visuals. I mean, it's an incredible ideation tool. And I think I said this on my Instagram last night. I kind of went on a little written, I think it's a positivity rant is what they would call it. But I know a lot of my friends in entertainment are really, really scared, and I get it. There are a lot of jobs that will be displaced, and I don't think we should discount that. And there will need to be upskilling programs, and the unions are going to have to get involved, and the studios are going to have to get involved. But I also think this is going to be one of the biggest opportunities that individual creators and multi-hyphenate talent will ever see in the history of Hollywood, because there will be zero gatekeepers to get your incredible script made. You know, the writer whose scripts have been passed around and shelved at 9 different studios that are just fed up with the system will finally be able to make their magnus opus, and the actor who's been like struggling to get quality roles, interesting, nuanced characters, can finally build the vehicle for themselves.
Yeah.
But it's going to take an entrepreneur mindset, and people who don't have that, who just want to show up and do the one thing that they're kind of trained and skilled to do, those will be the people that will get left behind in this unless they kind of take on a different view. But it will be very exciting for a number of individuals. I think we'll see, the tech world has been talking about how we'll soon see the first $1 billion single person company built using AI.
Yeah, wow.
I think we'll see the same thing in entertainment. Mm-hmm. I think you'll have the Shonda Rhimes of the world, the Seth MacFarlanes of the world, these like epic creator types come out of nowhere that kind of just see a vision through from start to finish. They're the writer, director, cinematographer. And I think there'll still be collaboration, of course, but it won't be these massive teams anymore. It's going to be lean, and as a result, I think we'll have better stories. You know, like, how many times have you watched something that just gets watered down? It's like some sequel of a sequel of a sequel, and many people have been working on it that it's lost its life force. So I'm excited to see what comes out of the weird brains of people who just like haven't had their shot.
I think when we first came out here, it was like all traditional, like the traditional Hollywood system where you do have to come out here and like hone your chops. You have to get on interviews constantly, auditions, stuff like that. But it was so difficult probably for people to break in initially.
So tough.
Especially even like with music, it's like, okay, I have an idea, but I can't afford the studio time or something like that. Now all I need is a guitar. I can kind of create other voices, a symphony, whatever, you know?
That's right. Yeah. And it's expanding those other, I think, I remember when I started in music, or there was someone that I was working with that they had, you know, they had to hire all of their session musicians.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they didn't have the confidence to do anything else but that. Mm. And now with these new tools, it's like, you get to put on all those hats. Mm. That's, to me, that's an expansion of creativity, not like a force limiter. But that's my two cents. And then the other thing that I think will change dramatically, and I'm curious, I think most people would be happy with this, but it's just a weird thing to consider, is we've just all accepted, this is less in the music industry space, although maybe it is like this in music industry too. We've all just accepted these crazy 12-hour plus work days. Like this is normal to be on set. Just, I mean, by the end you are dead, and you know, if you're a writer, I'm sorry, if you're a director or producer, you're on set for 16 hours because that's just your first one to get there, last one to leave. And I think it's not been a healthy place to work. Like Hollywood has not been a healthy work environment for decades. Mm-hmm. It's just stressful. And I think these tools, I hope it encourages people to scale it down. Like we don't need to work like this. We don't need to work people to death to save the extra dollar, because production just got so cheap overnight. So
I think the studios will probably be big proponents of it, but it's the people that are production company.
We have to have a mental shift. Like, I mean, we've even now, there's all these great studies that have been happening in Europe showing that a 4-day work week is much better. Like workers are more productive. Mm-hmm. They're happier. They stay at the companies longer. Mm-hmm. Even the company C-level executives are happier. So that, and they're the ones that have to show bottom line things are getting done. So now a lot of countries are adopting these 4-day work plans. And these are 8-hour work days. On film sets, people are working 6 days a week, 12 plus hours a day. A lot of this is back-breaking physical and mental work.
Yeah, the background actors.
And they're doing it for weeks, sometimes months on end. And I think we have a mental health problem in Hollywood, and I really hope AI helps.
This is hopefully solving that, yeah.
But I'm just, for anyone out there, like that's a studio head or producer or whatever, let's reduce those hours. Let's make them normal so people can have families and live a normal life.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's just gonna be an additive tool for everything. So,
yeah.
Because I think you need the people to, you know, the producers that are involved maybe in doing cinematography, things like that. They need to program and input the values first, right?
That's right.
Just with like any 100%. Financial system, once there was new technology, you still needed people there, the accountants, the financiers, to kind of like input the data.
Yep. I believe that cinematographers will almost be like today's creative director at an ad agency. They go in, they set the visual style, the tone, they do all the storyboarding, they figure out the right angles, the lens. They're still using even this very specific lenses. It's just in prompting. Mm-hmm. So the only difference is they're not like hauling a camera and breaking their back every day, but they're still using their expertise. So yeah, I think it's just a shift in how we think about the roles.
And Sora, are they using Unreal Engine? Is that how they get all of the
that
beautiful?
That is the belief. That is.
Well, oh, we don't know.
Okay. We don't know for, well, maybe someone does know for sure. When everything happened, when the announcement was made a week, 2 weeks ago, whenever that was, no one was certain, and they certainly hadn't replied about it. But it was pretty clear based on how the videos were coming out and the quality that it had to be. They had to be using Unreal Engine.
Because if you're extrapolating upon, you know, more scenes and jungle and things like that, you don't have all that in film.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so there's some limitations of Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. As a result, like I think that films will still be using real people for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I think the days of building out massive sets, of having to go into a huge production studio, I think those are numbered.
And do you think it's taking out, in terms of just the storytelling, even with music and film, is it taking out the human element? Or is there, I guess once we get to quantum computing, we'll have a potential sentience feel. But with music, it's like, you know, you see anything from Mozart to even Kurt Cobain, like Kurt Cobain went through all of that pain and emotion to create this tapestry of sound. Are we able to kind of replicate that with AI, or are we, you know, inputting all of the Kurt Cobains and the Mozarts in Bach, so you kind of have this tapestry that you're working with?
That's a great question. What do you think?
I think you still need that unique, you know, voice. Like that's what people are attracted to. Mm-hmm. But I don't know in the future if people I mean, there's already AI avatars that people are really engaging with. I mean, there's an AI OnlyFans model that is making $100,000 a month. So it's,
yeah.
But yeah, there's musicians out there, I think, that can replicate it. And it's hard to tell now the emotion in like a guitar riff or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think my answer would not be a popular one with most artists, yeah. Maybe because I'm not super precious about my own art.
Yeah, not true.
But I think it comes back to that question of, there's that philosophical question of, like, if you experience art and you have an emotional experience as a result of the art, and then you find out later that the art is a robot, does it change, you know, how much of it is just knowing that it was created with AI is what prevents you from having that
It's experience. Like a reverse Turing test almost.
Correct.
Yeah.
So if we were to take, we just don't know, because right now we're using AI as the headline. So we know when we're listening to something with AI most of the time because it's the Drake's AI song.
That's true. Okay.
Right? We're not hearing it. If you had just heard that song as it's Drake's new track, I don't know. I'm
really
not a
good.
Drake fan,
it was
but
a
like,
really good song. Yeah,
you know, it yeah. might have been that people were more excited about that than most of his
his previous work. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just hard to say.
Yeah.
So, I almost feel like we'd have to do a proper science experiment. Yeah. I know for me, I have seen AI art that has just blown my mind. This is visual art. Mm-hmm. I haven't yet heard anything musically that did the same thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe it's possible? Yeah, I do. Because those little tinglies and those goosebumps that you get when the cello hits in just the right spot, and then you've got the I don't know, whatever other instrument is playing on the top of it, and there's just this kind of texture that's unique. And I think that AI will start to be able to like self-select for those moments.
Oh, okay. 'Cause
if the purpose is for it to actually be getting better and doing what we want it to do, which is like be something that people will enjoy, then you'd think it would start manipulating itself in that direction.
So you would almost need composers like Hans Zimmer that recognize, 100%. Hey, this is a moment that's an impactful moment, not just input data.
That's right.
Generically, yeah.
You'd have Hans uploading what are the I don't know, 250 inflection points in these films that give people that hair-raising moment, and have him circle those sequences of notes, and then the AI starts to kind of understand how that works. Mm. Now that's Hans Zimmer inflection point style, but other artists have their own version of that. Yeah. So,
with the art, did you look at it as the headlines of, hey, this is AI art, or were you looking at it?
I actually saw it with the headlines of AI art.
So it's hard to know if you would get those tingly feel if you just saw it on a.
Yeah, but I did. I got the tingly feelings. Okay. I was like, I want this in my living room. This is so cool.
What artists are you looking at now? Is it more like NFT stuff or?
No, not NFT. I just follow a bunch of AI artists on Instagram. So now I have an ongoing kind of, what are they called? Playlists or scrapbooks? I don't know. Whatever they're called. So I keep an ongoing collection.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's cool stuff out there.
I love it.
People are making cool stuff.
It's just,
I also like, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just, it's weird because we're kind of transitioning out of the web, not out of, but like the Web3 NFTs hype and phase, and AI is now the main driver of all of this. But how is like NFTs, do you think, are you involved in that at all?
I never got into that.
Okay.
That was one of those that, sorry to all my NFT friends out there.
Do you see the value in it though? Or is it just
no. I don't.
I think the underlying tech is really cool, but it was a lot of bad actors that entered the space too that were just kind of pump and dump schemes. And
I think I love the underlying tech. I love being able to establish provenance. I love the idea of being able to create this kind of interesting royalty system where art continues. But to me, I was like, I just don't understand the financial value side of that. Like this thing, I could just take a screenshot of it and I could put it on. Is it just being able to say you own it? It was the commerce attached to it that started mimicking the physical art world. And the physical art world, the reason it accumulates value is simply because you have scarcity, but that's physical scarcity. With the NFTs, it was tough for me because I'm like, I get that it's scarce because it's one of one, but it's still a digital item where people can sort of replicate it in a very easy way. So it never quite landed for me, but I think it's, you know, I'm a huge fan of blockchain technology in general. Mm. I think it's still going to be probably the underlying technology will be what serves the foundation of all future entertainment, right? Mm.
I think so. I mean, I guess it is a one of one if it's on the blockchain, but it is
on the blockchain, but the physical experience is not one of one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of a million.
Yeah. Because if you do screenshot it, you don't own it, but you still get that same feeling as what it would be. Yeah.
Whereas, like, most people can't really get the physical experience of the Mona Lisa.
Right.
I mean, I guess you could just, like, print it out and put it on your wall, but it's not going to be the same.
Yeah. But so you think that's kind of dead now, and then AI is taking over, or NFT is going to be integrated into AI at all?
Well, crypto's in its bear market again. Bull.
Yeah, bull. I was like,
I don't know why I said bear market.
Super excited about that now, yeah.
So it's doing really well. I think as a result, we'll see NFTs back right?
It's just
anytime there's money, that's where it goes. But to me, AI is in a whole other category. AI is bigger than the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, like the internet being probably the most revolutionary technology over the past four decades, mm-hmm. five decades. I think it's here to stay, and it'll be integrated into everything.
Yeah, and you can almost see, I guess, the division of transformative shifts. You have like fire, agriculture, electricity, and now AI. You think AI is probably going to be the most transformative for our species?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yep. Because it's going to figure out how to do things that we can't even comprehend at this point. It's going to solve so many problems, crack so many codes to medicine, health on one side, finance, data, safety, all of these other things on the other. And who knows, there might be some scary stuff too.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, is there any ominous things coming, you think? Or are you a benevolent, positive?
No. I mean, I prefer to live in the positive space because, like, why not? And as a explorer of tech, like, that's what I do all day. But it would be naive to say that this is not going to have some massive implications. It just might be that the implications we think that are going to happen are not the things that actually happen. Like, no one imagined when Facebook came out in 2003 that one of the biggest problems we'd have is that we don't own our own data. We'd be like, what? It's a social network. What does that have to do with owning our own data? And why is that a problem?
But they knew, I think, preemptively.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mark Zuckerberg has said, like, that was not what we... It's just who knew that would become the biggest lever, monetization lever. So with AI, I don't know. I mean, misinformation is the thing that scares the crap out of me. We can barely sense make as it is. Mm-hmm. Never mind with hyper-realistic audio and video footage. I'm terrified of what it'll do to our justice system.
Yeah.
You know, people being...
On video, is it AI?
Thinking that they could be caught committing atrocious crimes that they didn't actually commit.
Right.
And vice versa. I mean, now criminals that have actually committed something could say, well, that was an AI-generated... piece of audio. I didn't actually say
true.
That.
Yeah.
So I don't know how our justice system, how our government, how these kinds of like slow legacy businesses are going to be able to keep up with this technology. And when we don't have the ability to sense make, we there's so little trust in institutions and in experts and in sort of legacy businesses. And some of that is well-founded kind of skepticism. But a lot of that is also really bad. Like, suddenly everyone's just trusting their local social media influencer over someone who's had a lot of expert, you know, experience. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of like cultural shift. And now we have fake audio and video that look like the real thing. How will we make sense of reality? Mm-hmm. And then do we become an anarchist kind of civilization? I don't know. It's really, really strange.
Yeah, I don't know if there might be a new tech that comes out that kind of retroactively is able to tell.
There has to be that.
Yeah.
But it's how long before that can be implemented in the right ways. I suppose that would be one advantage of there being the Magnificent Seven, kind of controlling so many things, is they could probably very quickly, OpenAI could probably quickly disseminate a tool like that. Mm. but it's still scary.
Yeah, especially with like journalism too. Now it's, I mean, the election coming up. We had, I guess social media was the main thing affecting everything with the dossier and all that kind of stuff. But now it's going to be AI.
It's so scary. You know, in the election 4 years ago, I feel like you could spot a bad article.
Yeah, it was kind of
article.
Obvious if it was, implanted.
Like, well, that's, there's no critical, and you took 5 seconds to Google and find the real story, behind the headline, but it's now getting increasingly hard. I mean, just this last month, what New York Times has recounted a couple of stories. I mean, these are legacy media publications that have the most stringent review processes in place, and they're saying we got it wrong, like we got it really, really wrong. And a lot of that is just because of this misinformation tunnel.
Yeah. Ominous times ahead.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I think we need new tech to kind of help with that.
More
stuff.
Tech More to tech. Solve the tech.
Exactly.
Tech on tech on tech.
Tech on Band-Aids. Tech squared. Yeah. I love it.
Well, anything else you want to plug? Anything you're working on? Any projects or?
Oh, man. I mean, no, I'm having a lot of fun playing with these tools, experimenting. If people want to follow along with me, they can go to my Instagram. That's usually the place I share stuff.
Check out her OG videos, and I don't think she's swiped them off yet, but.
Oh, no. I have tried.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Shout out to Julian Banks. Yes, sir. And I am Big Snoop Dogg.